What's up, everybody? My name is Matt, and this is episode number 2. I can't believe we made it all the way to episode number 2 of Marks and Smarks. Joined with me is my co-host for this awesome wrestling adventure, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I can't complain. I've had a couple of crazy things happen in my life as of recent, but it's nice that you can always fall back on something like professional wrestling, as lame as that sounds, to like always kind of be there as like a constant in a way. Does that make sense?
It's I said to a friend of mine a couple of days ago that pro wrestling is always going to be my mistress.
Exactly. No matter what's going on in your life or your world, you can always kind of fall back and like watch a really good classic matchup. Or I don't know, did you see that the WWE Network just released a classics collection recently?
Yeah, it had the holy grail of all footage on there, the last battle of Atlanta, the cage match between Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer and Wildfire Tommy Rich.
Oh, I have not even seen that one yet. I was going to touch up on the fact that Bret Hart faced Terry Funk for an ECW matchup, and I was just like, this is awesome.
You know what it is the WWF's or the WWE's description of that is deceptive. What that match is it's Bret Hart versus Terry Funk for the WWF World Championship at their Terry Funk retirement show in Amarillo in 97.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily under ECW endorsement,
right.
But it is, but it's crazy because it is ECW, or because Terry Funk and his lineage with ECW, everybody from ECW was there. It was actually really cool to hear Joey Styles call a Bret Hart match. That was what I thought was so cool about it.
Pretty bizarre.
It is. It's absolutely crazy. But yeah, it's one of those things where like if you're going through some crazy crap or whatever, like you can kind of watch like old matches, or you can kind of catch up with like storylines, and it just kind of, it's one of those like the glues that holds on to everything together. And that's what I personally have really liked about the Cruiserweight Classic, is because now that I've kind of got a certain amount of knowledge about some of these performers, watching them to continue do well in the tournament. And obviously next week we have a live taping of it. It's not, so is next week going to be the finale as well?
I'm not sure. They haven't been real clear about that. I wouldn't be surprised if it was, because the Cruiserweights are debuting on Raw on the 17th, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, they haven't been real clear about how that's working right now.
Because as of right now, what they would do basically is they would have the semifinals and then the finals, which would be cool. I wouldn't mind seeing them tackle something like that, but it just seems like I was surprised, because I thought originally that we were only going to see the finals alive, and that everything else would still be kind of the pre-recorded style that it's been so far. But if it is live for the semifinals and we see... let's see, it's going to be Kota Ibushi against Gran Metalik, I believe. Or is Kota Ibushi going against...
It's Kota Ibushi and TJ Perkins one, and Gran Metalik and Zack Sabre Jr. in the other.
Oh, okay, so I got it mixed up. Okay, so, well, let's go ahead and talk about the matches. What we saw from the quarterfinals, I was impressed with the first couple, with the Gran Metalik versus, who did he go against?
He faced Akira Tozawa.
Yes, I actually dug that match quite well. I think that both of them put on a good wrestling clinic. It was funny, because I actually had a friend of mine come over. He was hanging out for the evening and stuff, and I was like, oh, you know, I know he's like one of those old school wrestling fans who liked the Attitude Era, but then like slowly drifted away like most people did. But I was like, I think you might like it. It's pretty cool. It's cruiserweight, so obviously you're gonna see that like high flying style stuff, so that's always fun. So we're watching that one especially, and Gran Metalik has that awesome dive from the ring to the outside where he goes on the middle rope he uses to jump over, and it just looks so cool. Like even he was just jaw dropping and just like that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't be entirely surprised to see him win the entire tournament. I believe he's one of the guys they've announced for as the first 10 competitors of the Cruiserweight division on Raw. Matter of fact, of the guys that are left, I think Zack Sabre Jr. is the only one. Oh no, Kota Ibushi, that hasn't been announced, and I haven't really gotten, you know, on some other podcasts I listened to, they've been talking about how there's people in the WWE that just aren't that into the way that Zack Sabre Jr. works. I think we touched on that last time.
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that that's the truth, only because if they didn't like him and they didn't like the way that he worked, why is he in this semifinal?
Yeah. I don't think they would throw him out there just for him to lose. as a way to, like, I don't know. That seems like a very odd way to teach him a lesson in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I could see them taking him out much earlier. It's like saying, like, we appreciate your style. We like what you're doing, but we don't want you to go too far in this. But they've given him a very big push in this. They've given him that exposure. So it seems odd that he's, as of right now, just because of what you had said about Ibushi, how he still wants to work Japan and he still wants to work, you know, whatever he's able to do on his own merit and stuff. I see Zack Sabre Jr. taking the whole thing. He's definitely started to impress me more and more, especially because, you know, Jack Gallagher's gone. Otherwise, he'd be my pick to win. So I'm just going to put all of that now over to Zack Sabre Jr.
I think it's hard for me to pick because when you look at these last four guys, they've all had insanely good showings. But I think Zack Sabre Jr. might be the odds-on favorite at this point. I know they're really high on Grand Metalik, so I wouldn't be surprised if he won either. And the 10 guys that they've announced for the cruiserweight division, almost all of them were in at least the quarterfinals. So, I think I'd go get Zack Sabre Jr. On the last episode, I called Johnny Gargano, and then pretty much right away he lost. So,
in a great match, mind you.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent match.
Yeah, he's, Johnny Gargano is one of those, one of those really, really special performers. They've got something in him. And, you know, a lot of the guys in the Cruiserweight Classic or that they're bringing in for the Cruiserweight division are finishing up their indie dates now, so we'll be seeing a lot more of them. And it's my understanding that the cruiserweight division is going to be 10 guys initially. They're going to compete on Raw, but they're mostly going to be touring with the NXT brand and working at the Performance Center.
Well, that'd be good. Let's go ahead and talk about another one of these matches. The one that I think it was as much a surprise as it was predictable, just because, like I said the last time we had spoke, like, either one of these guys could have won, and it's totally understandable. But Brian Kendrick versus Kaito Ibushi I don't know if it was the match of the quarterfinals, just because I would have liked to have seen Brian Kendrick kick out of the Golden Star Powerbomb, I think, just at least one time, just to give it a little bit more drama. But the fact that Brian Kendrick pulled out a burning hammer, like, could not believe, like, he put him up in the torture rack. I'm like, there's no, oh my God, he did it. He just did a burn. I was not a fan that he kicked out. Like, that was the one thing I didn't like about it, because it happened early enough in the match that I felt like, well, that's not going to be the end of this, I don't think. But it was pleasant to see the maneuvers pulled off in that match, and the drama and the talent of both wrestlers, obviously. But I just felt like it could have been a little bit more, I guess Brian Kendrick could have looked a little stronger in his loss.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he'll be on Raw, so it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. But I would have liked to have seen him kick out also. I think you and I messaged a little bit on Twitter about that burning hammer, and I popped for the spot. But in the same respect, being such an old school Puro fan and a huge Kenta Kobashi fan, watching someone kick out of a burning hammer that isn't Mitsuhiro Misawa or Toshiaki Kawada was just kind of bizarre to watch, especially so early.
Yeah, or isn't a championship match, or it isn't the finale. Like, that move is such a it's respected beyond purist wrestlers, I think, to such an extent that I don't want to say it was disrespectful to have him kick out the way that he did, but it was definitely a misuse of that maneuver that's supposed to be. I mean, the innovator of it, what was his name? I can't.
Kenta Kobashi.
Yes, I think he's done it a total of, I think it was like, I read this stat one time. It was like, he's done it 8 times, and each one of those 8 times, no one's ever kicked out. Like,
yeah, that sounds right.
So I don't like that they let Brian Kendrick do it just to allow, you know, Kaito to kick out of it. I felt that was a little not needed, I guess.
Yeah, it was definitely to pop the crowd,
yes,
which is fine.
It was
good. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely good. I mean, it definitely surprised me. But, the first thing that I said to you on Twitter was, you know, like, I liked it, but I didn't like the kick out.
Yep, and we both agree on that for sure. But overall, the match was very good. I liked the bully choke moment after Kaito went for, did he go for the moon? Or he went for the 450 splash, I believe. And and immediately Brian Kendrick throws on the bully choke. And there was at least 3 seconds of time that I thought Brian Kendrick is going to win. Like, I forgot about, like, the pacing of the match. I forgot that we hadn't seen the powerbomb yet. Like, I had forgot about all of that stuff. And I was like, oh, he might do it. He might do it. Then it went a little long, and I was like, okay, so he's not going to do it. But that was a great that was a great moment, too.
They made you believe.
They did. I marked out.
Takes a lot.
Yeah, but overall, I think that it was a very good match. It lived up to what I expected, but not the greatest of all the matches by far. And then I also want to touch on the T.J. Perkins Rich Swann match. Already we know T.J. Perkins went over. Rich Swann did a valiant effort. I liked how he hyperextended his knee on that backflip that he did to the outside, and they continually used it throughout the entire match. I thought that was really, really good. I don't know if you noticed, and maybe I was just hearing something odd, but after TJ got the win, was there a noticeable booing in the crowd?
Yes. To be honest, I just finished watching that match maybe 15 minutes before we started recording.
Good, so you'll be fresh on it.
Yeah, and I noticed it also. There was, and I mean, you know, what that comes down to is they're recording this in front of a really heavy NXT crowd, and then they're very, very familiar with Rich Swann.
Okay.
They're really, really into his work, so they didn't want him to lose. But it's faint, but I definitely noticed it also.
I heard the crowd saying this is bullshit, but they had edited it out. I don't know if that was true or not, but I swear there is not a lot of love for TJ Perkins, which I thought was kind of surprising.
I heard the same thing, and it was kind of hard to see if that's hear what they were chanting or not, but that was my interpretation of it also. I think that TJ is just a total victim of who his opponent was. You know, I mean, it wasn't so much a reflection of him and his work as much as it was a compliment to Rich Swann.
Yeah, and just going over the match, because I think that both performers did a superb job. This one, for all the quarterfinal matches, as it was, just the quarterfinal matches, I think this one might have been my favorite overall as a technical wrestling standpoint. I enjoyed what we saw with the Zack Sabre and the Noam Dar, but I feel like we've already kind of seen what we saw with Zack Sabre Jr. I don't know if that's because he got kind of put on showcase 2 weeks in a row, maybe, is why I'm thinking that. But I appreciate it. I like Rich Swann a lot. He's so talented, the guy, and he has such a great style to him and everything. But I thought these two meshed really well together. TJ was able to throw him for a loop. Rich Swann was able to counter, and those were some stiff hits. Both of them hit kicks that were just like jaw-droppingly suspenseful. Like, there were moments where however they're able to produce that wonderful pop sound, they do it so well. I mean, it was very good.
I actually probably would go the opposite of you. I liked the Zack Sabre Jr. Noam Dar match more.
Okay.
And I think maybe I would have liked Rich Swann and TJ Perkins more, although I thought the finishing sequence of Sabre Jr. and Noam Dar was just nuts.
Yeah, that was great. That was awesome.
The way that he caught him and then put him in that arm lock and was headbutting his shoulder. But the thing that that took away from the Noam Dar TJ or the Rich Swann TJ Perkins match for me was that I had just finished watching someone work over a leg. You know, so Sabre Jr., you know, he had been having his leg worked over almost his entire match by a guy who had won every single move or match so far by leg lock. So I thought that TJ Perkins and Rich Swann told a better story with the knee work and the selling of it, but it still seemed too familiar to what I had just finished watching.
Yeah, I can totally feel that. Overall, a very good quarterfinals. Now we're going to be wading into our semifinals, which is going to see Grand Metalik go against Zack Sabre Jr. And then we're also going to see Kato Ibushi go against TJ Perkins in what is going to be besides the finals, which I think all four of these guys put one-on-one with each other, is going to perform to an amazing job. Like, I think it's going to be a wonderful finale that we see. But these two matches, I think, is going to be very good as well. I see Zack Sabre going over on Grand Metalik, just because I think Grand Metalik's persona and style is going to be fine if he wins or loses. It doesn't really matter. He's the high flyer of all these guys. Like, to be honest, he's the one that actually goes to the top rope, does the backflips a little bit more, jumps to the outside. I mean, we obviously know that they're all capable of doing it, but that's part of his lucha background where you're going to see that a little bit more. So that kind of saves him from ever looking weak in a loss. Like, it doesn't matter, as long as he does at least one or two high spots, it's going to be fine. So I see Zack Sabre Jr. going over on him. And then I actually see Kota Ibushi going over on TJ Perkins, just because I think it's a little bit bigger name. And I actually like Kota Ibushi a little bit more. So I prefer to see that match between Kota Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr. Like, that's my dream finale match. What about yourself?
I think I would go the same direction. I'm pretty happy either way if Ibushi wins or if TJ Perkins wins. I enjoy Ibushi more by a very small margin, but I also like TJ Perkins a lot. But I think that we're going to see Ibushi in the finals because, you know, Perkins will be seeing on Raw. There's no real guarantee right now that we'll see Ibushi again. And if it is Zack Sabre Jr. and Ibushi, then I see Zack Sabre Jr. winning the entire thing also. So it looks like we have the same brackets from here on out.
Yep. These are going to be some really good. The whole tournament, I remember I was listening to you talk about on your on the Indie Darlings podcast that you do over at Working a Rest Hold. Check those guys out, by the way. We'll give plugs at the end of the show. But you were talking about the G1 and how you're almost getting a little bit burnt out by the amount of wrestling that you're watching for that tournament. And I almost felt that same way about this tournament until I looked at the bracket and I was like, oh, we only have three more matches left. Like, this has been a very good tournament. I mean, I'm looking back at some of these bouts, and like, even I think my personal like surprise great match was Zack Sabre Jr. against Drew Gulak. I remember we had spoke about that a little bit, and you told me that Drew Gulak, even though many fans may not know him, he's actually, you know, very involved in the world of wrestling. That was a great match that I just did not expect to see all the technical wrestling from, just the fact that he looks like a big bulking guy and how well they told that story of with Zack Sabre Jr. coming over with the win over him. And it was great. And then obviously I found out about great guys like Jack Gallagher, and just the whole tournament in general, for me personally, watching that little storyline with Brian Kendrick, like, it's been a very, very good tournament, and I'm excited for hopefully they're able to keep this going every year type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a great opportunity for them to pad their roster, both NXT and the Cruiserweight division, with the best wrestlers in the world. And the guys that don't get signed get exposure. So, the worst case for them is they don't end up on Raw, but everybody's booking them more and everybody knows who they are. I mean, outside of, you know, some of the guys in the opening rounds, I mean, I don't think that too many U.S. indies are going to be signing Ho-Ho Lun anytime soon. But in general, it's a great opportunity for people to get out there. And you know, I would imagine that it would be a yearly thing, unless it's just the kickstart the Cruiserweight division. But it would be good if it was yearly.
Triple H was quoted as saying that he would like to do this more than once, when they did that whole bracketology and they were talking to him and they had asked him, hey, is this like a one-time thing or are we going to see this more often? He said that this is something that he wants to keep going. And obviously, you're going to say anything at the start of anything that you start up, but I do hope that we see – I hope we see other tournaments too. I mean, I would love to see – obviously, SmackDown is doing the tag team tournament, which I did not keep up on. But I heard it when it's looking okay. I'd even like to see, I mean, the old classics, old school fandom is like, I'd love to see a hardcore tournament for no reason, just for the fun of it. But even like a heavyweights tournament, it would be cool. One of my favorite things that WWF, WWE used to do was the King of the Ring tournament. I actually really, really like that King of the Ring tournament. I would love for them to bring that back. And given the success, or what it sounds like to be kind of semi-successful with this Cruiserweight Classic, there would be a chance that they could maybe bring that back.
Yeah, I mean, I've you know, they've tried over the years. I mean, they, you know, the last time I think was with Wade Barrett.
Yeah, but didn't they do it on Raw? Like, it was like the,
yeah,
King,
exactly,
of the,
I mean,
see, yeah, you can't not, you can't, you got to give it a good push to make it seem like it's valuable of some kind.
I'm a big fan of the King of the Ring for various reasons. The 1994 King of the Ring that Owen Hart won was my first live event ever.
Oh, awesome.
So I have, you know, fond memories, but I agree. I mean, you know, it could be something special and prestigious. It would have been a lot more special and prestigious if they had not stopped doing it to begin with. But, I mean, you know, pay-per-views and pay-per-view titles seem to change on a yearly basis now, so I wouldn't be surprised if they brought it back at some point. I mean, they can see how that well this one works and kind of learn from it.
Yep, and I could see it happening. I definitely could. It seems like it was a pretty good, successful, you know, endeavor that they went into. So, but enough with the Cruiserweight Classic, because it's coming to an end, and we will be talking about it once it's all done and over, and we'll hopefully see the dream match that we're hoping for the finales, and who knows, maybe we'll be upset, but we'll be pleasantly surprised. Who knows? But we are going to talk a little bit about Backlash, which is the next pay-per-view coming up through WWE. It's going to be a SmackDown-only pay-per-view, which I guess I understood that when the brand split, we'd probably see some of these brand-exclusive pay-per-views, but I really don't want to see that, right? I mean, I don't know how you feel about brand-specific pay-per-views, but I'm not really interested in just seeing one roster, I guess, because there's so much talent on Raw that I want to see guys and gals from Raw come over and do the pay-per-view. Same way I feel about SmackDown, though, because there's talent from SmackDown that I want to see put on those main stages as well. I don't really care to see one side of the brand by itself, kind of.
It's tough. I agree. You know, when you've got two different heavyweight titles, it's tough to have, you know, this Sunday, let's watch Dean Ambrose defend his championship and then wait an entire month more to watch Kevin Owens defend his.
That seems just outrageous.
It does. I mean, but, you know, also you have to put it in a different context altogether and think back to when there were four pay-per-views a year and that title really only got defended. I mean, it got defended on Saturday Night's Main Event or something like that infrequently, but really you would build towards Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. So they've kind of, you know, brainwashed us to want that title match every single month. But it's tough because I would rather see a pay-per-view where SmackDown and Raw are together.
Yeah.
You know, but in the same respect, how does that work if they're trying to make the brands legitimately compete? I mean, which is a stretch because, I mean, I don't know who really in 2016, except for little kids, are believing that, you know, Raw is its own brand and SmackDown is its own brand and they're competing for ratings and it's all kind of hokey. But I would rather them not do this whole SmackDown thing and then Raw, because it kills the momentum of, I mean, you know, here you've got Kevin Owens, who we'll touch on a little bit, that's, you know, the Universal Champion, and he's got a great story, and, you know, there won't be a match with him until next month.
And one of the terrible things that the WWE has done over time is they've really, they create decent stories. I mean, I've gotten involved in this, and I like this idea, and I like what they're doing. I was so saddened by the fact that Finn Balor got hurt, and he wasn't going to be able to run for 6 months. It's like, well, crap, I don't know why I should care, because he was the person that I backed and I wanted to see win. I'm kind of bored of Seth Rollins just a tiny bit. So, like, I was excited to see that new blood from Finn Balor. And then when all of a sudden Kevin Owens wins, you're like, oh, great, there's another shot of adrenaline that's pumped through this. But now all of the energy is supposed to be towards Backlash. So it's like they're making Kevin Owens take a back seat to his big moment that's supposed to feel momentumous. But now it just kind of feels like, well, you know, it's important, but let's just hold on for a minute. You know, you're the big guy, but just hold on for a minute. I don't know.
No, I agree. And, you know, there's a whole lot of things about that situation. If you take away the brand specific pay-per-views, it's like, you know, Kevin Owens wins the title because Triple H comes out and pedigrees Rollins and Reigns and then walks past Stephanie and Mick Foley, and they look completely surprised by his actions. Then you fast forward a week later, no Triple H, no explanation, and no Kevin Owens match for a month, month and a half.
Yep.
So there's no, you know, as excited as they left people when Triple H hit that pedigree on Rollins and Owens won the title, was as deflated as it felt when nothing happened the next week. You know, and now it's like, okay, it's Owens versus Rollins, and then Reigns is facing Owens next week for a chance to hit the title. It's like, why is Reigns facing Owens? Why doesn't he face Rollins?
Yeah, that was one of the worst things that I went into when I started watching some of this other stuff, was the fact that all of a sudden Roman Reigns is back in the title picture. Yeah. I mean, I respect the guy as a worker, and I think that he's doing better in general, especially when they had him going after a minor title. Roman Reigns does not need the Universal title, and he doesn't need to be involved in the title picture at all. Like, it makes no sense right now. Roman Reigns needs to take a back seat. I know it's not him. I understand creative. I get it. But all I'm trying to say is that Roman Reigns should not be a part of this title picture, because it dampens it a little bit, because people are so, and I'm one of those people, I'm so sick of seeing that push for Roman Reigns. I like Seth Rollins as a worker, so I'm totally cool with him getting that shot at the title, because it makes sense story-wise and just kind of like common sense-wise. Like, he was the top dog, so of course he's going to get a shot at the title at a big pay-per-view. Makes sense. Whatever. But Roman Reigns, just get out. Get out.
There's a few points to hit on there. I agree. First off, Roman Reigns doesn't need to be in the match. It put a damper on the entire vibe behind the whole thing, and it hurts him more than they've already hurt him. Mm. I like Roman Reigns a lot, and everything I understand there's some things about him I don't like. The Superman punch being hit 12 times, being a UFC fan myself, it's the lamest thing to watch him do every match, but it's not his fault because they're telling him to do it. But he's similar to John Cena in that he's getting pushed as Superman, but he happens to be able to wrestle also. So he's stuck in this rock in a hard place where they've booked him so poorly that the crowds hate him. Personally, I'm of the belief that, they won't do it with John Cena. They should do it with Roman Reigns. The only thing that's going to fix him is turning him heel.
Roman Reigns would make a good heel because he's powerful too as well. He would be a good monster heel that doesn't have to be a monster like Braun Strowman or whatever his name is. But he'd be a legitimate threat in the fact that like we talked about with the match that he had on at the last pay-per-view SummerSlam where he just beat the crap out of Rusev. That was a heel turn that they're not using proper, but it looked great. It was him just like no regard, no care, no nothing. He was just strong and he beat somebody up.
Yeah, that's who he should be.
Yes.
The other thing that I thought they really dropped the ball with is I agree again. Rollins makes sense. Rollins to come out and be, to win a title match makes absolute sense. And, what should have happened, or which would have made a lot more sense than Roman Reigns coming out, is don't have Kevin Owens face Sami Zayn in the main event of Raw in a nothing match. Sami should have been the one to come out. Yes. And he should have been the one to be like, I beat Kevin Owens at the last pay-per-view. Like, well, if he's the champion and I beat him, that should be my match, not Roman. Like, that would have made more sense than just throwing Sami at Owens, having Owens go over. Now, Sami's lost that heat that he had. It doesn't make any sense for Sami to want a challenge for that title now because Owens just, disposed of him. So after Rollins, it's like, where does Owens go with that title? Unless he drops it, which would be, a really poor decision. I thought they botched the whole thing. The only thing good about the entire situation is Kevin Owens having that belt.
Yeah, I agree. And your point about Sami Zayn is actually one of the reasons why a lot of us fans who are older when it comes to the WWE, it's why we have problems with the booking and the story behind it, because the reality is it would have made a perfect story for Sami Zayn to be like, I beat you on a large stage last time. It's my turn, not your turn. And then that creates a wonderful feud that would actually strengthen Kevin Owens by winning the match, because Sami Zayn went over on the last match they ever had together. And it would have given Kevin Owens just that little bit more of momentum of being like, oh man, he's changed, or he's different, or he's ready to go. It's something different. But like you're saying, just kind of disposing of him and moving on, it just kind of, once again, like for us, it's like the conversation you said you had a friend who's like, oh, you give him the benefit of the doubt. But the reality is we don't forget things that happened last week.
No.
Yeah.
No, and that's what they want. They want you, they want you to have short-term memory and not worry about things making sense, which is fine if that's your thing. I mean, to get a cheap hop or whatever, but it doesn't do a whole lot for me. I mean, I have a tough time sitting through, 3 hours of Raw to watch a really good match between Chris Jericho and Seth Rollins and a really good match between Owens and Zayn, and then having to watch that New Day Anderson Gallows crap
They're just destroying Anderson and Gallows, are they not? Like,
oh yeah,
it's bizarre how any wrestler can go to Japan and become these top guys and really showcase like all their skills and abilities and their humor, whatever the case may be, all this stuff, and then they come to WWE and they're basically just they're used for humor. And the reality is a good humor tag team doesn't exist anymore. Back in the day of Edge and Christian, like we remember fondly, like the New Age Outlaws and Edge and Christian, Fumaki and what's his name? I can't remember his name now.
Oh, Taka Michinoku.
Yes, like we remember some of these like old school tag teams that had like humor to them and stuff like that. But the reality is like they could actually push themselves and tell compelling stories and wrestle very well. The problem is they're only using these tag teams as humor now. They're not showcasing that wrestling style or the storyline behind it. They're just trying to make one joke. And it's getting so boring about that. Every time I think they're going to like push the tag team division like to the next level and we're going to see like really good matches again, they just do these like bizarre humor lines and it's dumb.
One of the things that I'm bothered by is, and I agree, there are no good comedy tag teams. I mean, the one comedy tag team they have there, or that relies a lot on comedy besides the New Day, are Enzo and Cass.
And they're less humorous. They're just very gifted when it comes to gap. I mean, yes, what he's saying is funny, which is so they are humorous, but they don't rely on WW and bootios and all that kind of like the gimmicky comical stuff. Like they made a punchline out of how you doing. I mean, all that kind of stuff. Like they're the New Age Outlaws compared to some of those really crappy humorous tag teams that the New Day is. You know, like I did not like the New Day in the beginning. Then all of a sudden I was like, oh yeah, these New Day guys, they're great. And now I'm just getting kind of bored of the New Day.
Oh well, they're a very tired act.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing that is worth pointing out is imagine what it must be like to be Luke Gallows, where you're in the WWE and they make you Festus.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they put you with CM Punk and you get, you know, a good gimmick. And then you're released. And when you're released, you float around. He did, you know, a little bit of TNA, some indies, but really, like, he, you know, if you listen to, he's been on some podcasts, he talks about how he lost his way and going to New Japan and becoming, you know, Doc Gallows at the time and tag teaming with Carl Anderson and becoming this just total, you know, like, just overpowering badass tag team. And then you get signed to the WWE and you go back and they're doing all the same stuff to him all over again.
Yep.
It's bizarre to me. Like, why bother signing these guys from Japan to have them come in and dress in doctor's gowns with, you know, urine cups behind them and everything? It's just it's terrible.
It really is. I almost want to say that it's like Vince McMahon's own little sick joke of saying, like, if you did well in Japan, we don't take you seriously in America. I mean, look at what they did with Tensai. I mean, you know what I mean? Like there's been other cases and situations too. So it's just so bizarre how each one of them eventually becomes a comedy act. And I'm just not a fan of it. Sounds like you're not a fan of it either, but let's talk about what we're actually going to talk about, which was Backlash, which somehow we just slowly turned into all these other things. Let's go over the match card that we know about as of right now. We have Dean Ambrose, of course, the champion, going against AJ Styles. I want to hear your thoughts on that one. Then we're going to have Alexa Bliss versus Becky Lynch versus Camellia versus Naomi versus Natalie versus Nikki Bella in a six-pack challenge elimination match for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. Then we also have the tag team semifinals, which is going to be, I guess, the Usos, because didn't American Alpha, they're not in it no more, right? Because there was an injury.
The Usos attacked American Alpha after the match. And
is it a worked injury?
I think it's definitely a worked injury, yeah, and it was just for a heel turn. But you try to make sense out of the Usos being eliminated. So they attack their opponents after the bell, and they are awarded a spot back in the tournament again for that behavior.
Yeah, creative.
Yeah, that's a word for it.
That's a word association. Creative. then we're gonna have the Usos go against the Hyper Bros. Gotta love Mojo Rawley because he's so hype. It's just funny. But then after that, we're going to have the finale for the tag team tournament, which is going to see Heath Slater and Rhino versus one of those two. That's going to be interesting just because the Usos heel turn, which I think is a little late personally. But then also moving on, we got Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt in a singles match. Should be good. And then we also, I would imagine, probably to start off the entire show, is going to be The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental Championship. And before we talk about that match, let's talk about the worked shoot that happened on Talking Smack just for a moment and what you thought about it. Did you like the because, I mean, to anybody that may not know, The Miz went on Talking Smack. Daniel Bryan was on there. Daniel Bryan referred to him as being a soft wrestler. He said, when me and the indie guys would talk about the WWE style, we talk about guys like you. We'd be like, oh, that's that soft WWE style. You kind of wrestled like a coward. And then Miz goes, you know, ape crazy, and goes and tells him all these things, and he says you should wrestle, and he's like, well, I would if the doctors would let me, and he's like, well, you should quit, which was the only legitimate thing that I thought he said was not warranted, but made it sound angry when he said you should quit and go wrestle inside of your pool halls and your gymnasiums and stuff. I thought that was actually well done. And then Daniel Bryan walks away. Then he starts yelling into the camera saying, like, I'm the champion. I'm the guy who's here. I do all these things. I know it was supposed to make him seem passionate and kind of angry and heelish and stuff like that, but I didn't like it. I don't know if it's just because I'm not a fan of The Miz in general, but I didn't think it made him sound serious. I hate to say it like this, but I feel like because he didn't swear, and I know that sounds weird, but it didn't sound legitimate. It just sounded like something he was supposed to say on cue. What'd you think about the whole shoot?
I'm not super into what the WWE is doing with these like worked shoot angles or blurring the lines between reality and work, but it was interesting. The fact that it's not going to lead to anything, like the fact
that's
that
the problem, right? That's the problem.
Well, the problem was that evidently what I've read is that the company didn't think that it would take off and didn't realize that the fans would then think that Daniel Bryan was coming back, which to me is just like, how could you not? I mean, it's so bizarre to watch these guys going at it in such a passionate way. And, you know, Daniel Bryan has said that they were told they would have a confrontation, but that they pretty much ad-libbed it, which I do believe because it seemed like it.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the best promos The Miz has ever cut. The end part was a little hokey, but I think he was being pretty legitimate in what he was saying. Like, I think he believes it. But the fact that the next week the blow-off was Dolph Ziggler coming out was just sort of like, okay, well, so that was just a thing they did to do. And Daniel Bryan, and evidently like Dave Meltzer, has said that now they're keeping Miz and Daniel Bryan completely separate of each other. So there must have been some heat between them over it. Daniel Bryan has said to people like Mike Johnson from PW Insider that he's not at peace with the decision to have retired, and that he's not entirely sure in retrospect now that the doctors that he listened to about his brain injuries should have been making the decision. So he's still talking like he might leave and go work for New Japan. I mean, he mentioned the Tokyo Dome show that they have every January 4th, the Wrestle Kingdom event. So it's weird because it's kind of like, was that a window into, you know, Daniel Bryan's future or Bryan Danielson's future? It was okay. It was interesting. It was something different. It helped The Miz get a little bit more edge to his character. I mean, I know a lot of people really don't like him and he gets a lot of hate. I don't mind him. I mean, one of the things about that promo that was insanely true is that he's reliable. He doesn't get hurt and he's always available to the company and he does whatever they ask of him. And, as much as I'm not like, you know, I don't think he's great, he's good. And there's something to be said for, you know, someone that's a good hand. But I wouldn't want to see them do something like that again unless there was going to be a blow off.
Yeah, there needs to be. It's crazy that all this is cultivating at a place called Backlash, which is a perfect idea behind what happened. You know, that what's the backlash from all of this? But he's just going to have a fight against Dolph Ziggler, who ran with the whole "you're a coward" thing, obviously. But I'm going to assume, I don't know what you think, but The Miz is probably going to win making Dolph Ziggler look once again weak and making people just kind of annoyed that The Miz is still the champion. I don't know.
Yeah, I think The Miz will definitely win. And I'll make an unpopular statement that I think he should.
Oh, yeah, I think he should against Dolph Ziggler. Like, I don't know why we're not seeing the rematch against Apollo Crews. Apollo Crews is the one that needs to eventually take over that mantle to give him to start giving him that push. Otherwise, they're wasting Apollo Crews. He was drafted onto SmackDown. He's talked about being this great wrestler and this great performer, and they're doing nothing with him. It makes no sense that he wouldn't get that Intercontinental Championship.
But do you think at all that he was wasted before he ever came up, not having any build, no vignettes, no one knows who he is? You have to have watched NXT to know who this guy is. He can't talk great.
Yeah, that might be the bigger problem of all of it, let's be honest. Is if you can't give good mic, then you can't be on that stage, like, to a certain extent.
Oh, because he looks great, and he's one of the best performers in the company. But if you can't grab a microphone and cut a promo, they'll never push you.
You know, I think that if you look at, like, if you look at The Rock, if you look at Triple H, if you look at almost any of these big name wrestlers, they were good on the microphone to start with, but they got better and better as they did it more and more often. I don't think Apollo Crews could ever not do a good promo, but he needs to be pushed like he's important. Look at The Miz at the start of his career. He was terrible at giving promos. I mean, God awful at giving promos. When he held the WWE Championship, it was a joke. It was one of the reasons why so many people disliked it so much, is he didn't look like a champion. But I think because of that run that he had, all those things that happened with him and with The Rock and with John Cena, like, this is why The Miz is where The Miz is at today. So I think, I hate to say it, but I think they just need to give Apollo Crews the chance to prove himself to be good or bad, I guess.
Yeah, they're definitely not giving him a fair shake. It didn't make any sense to pull him up and draft him and have him challenge for that Intercontinental title and then lose in like 5 minutes. Because then it's just sort of like, okay, what was the point of that? You're not a stat. It's just, you know, that's what's irritating is I have a lot of friends that are just WWE fans, and so when they did the brand split and everything and they talked about the quote-unquote new era, they got really excited, and the new era is actually almost worse than the era before it.
It seems that way at times. It definitely does.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's changed. I mean, like, how many if you really sit back and think, new eras should really imply something new stars, new whatever. Like, we've got new championship belts, which are mirror images of the belts from the competing brand, just with a different color on them.
That's very hokey. Like, that literally feels like
when
if me and my brother both wanted to have a championship, it'd be like, well, my championship's called the Big Dog Championship, and he's like, yeah, well, my championship's called, like, the Bigger Dog Championship. Like, it makes no one. That's just, it's terrible. It sounds really hokey.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't care for it. And they haven't established any new stars, barely. I mean, we'll see what happens with people like Bayley. I mean, obviously, Finn Balor is going to be a huge star, and he will when he comes back. But, that's part of the problem, is that when you look at NXT and you look at the main roster, and the main roster is stale. I mean, they have no top faces on Raw right now, so I imagine that they'll probably turn Rollins. It kind of seems like that's the direction they're going.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, too.
But, you know, look at NXT and the talent that's down there. Nakamura, Samoa Joe, Austin Aries, Bobby Roode, they're all stars. And outside of maybe Nakamura, who could probably use just a little bit more time to before he comes up to TV, I think he's totally ready. I just think that they may not be ready for him. But the other three are made for TV. They are not getting any younger.
Oh, yeah. That's the way that I feel about Samoa Joe, especially. He needs that chance. He reminds me a lot of Taz. Taz, when he finally made his way to WWE, he was just that little bit past his prime that he couldn't do what he once did. And Samoa Joe is definitely getting to that point. Luckily, the majority of people who he's facing are his same, not style, but age group and ability, in the sense that they're not going to try to do something crazy that he wouldn't be able to do. So I think Samoa Joe, out of all those guys, maybe Austin Aries, maybe, has the best chance for, like, unbelievable success.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I love Austin Aries. I love Bobby Roode. But Samoa Joe is very, very, very special to me. I when I first started watching indie wrestling, he had just won the Ring of Honor World Championship and he held it for just under 2 years. And I went and saw him defend it everywhere. And he made me believe, he made me believe that he was the champ and that his belt mattered more than everybody else's. And he was the baddest man in wrestling. And there's no reason that they can't bring him out there and do that. I mean, honestly, I would have him be the guy that confronts Brock Lesnar.
Oh gosh. And I love what you, when you said that, like my mind like instantly clicked that same place. Like that would be so very good. And oh man, that would be excellent. That is the match that I want to see now. That's a dream match for sure.
But I mean, it can only happen, you know, like figure Joe, I think, is 36. So let's just assume like 5 years, like maybe he has five really good years, two or three of them, you know, like really good. He should be the guy to beat Brock and then get that rub from Brock beating The Undertaker and being unstoppable. Joe stops Lesnar and he becomes the guy.
That would be epic. It'd almost make the payoff of all the things that Brock Lesnar, like, okay in a way. Like, you almost feel like it all came to this one giant... That's a good storyline. I like that. Let's go ahead and touch on Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles real quick, just because I'm excited for this match. As we both kind of spoke last time that we gathered, we kind of both admitted that we're not huge Ambrose fans. Like, we understand what he is and what he's doing. It's just not as good as we kind of want him to be, is what I think it felt like to both of us, maybe. But I want to see AJ Styles go over, but I'm not sure what they're going to do.
I don't know what they're going to do either. There's only one right decision in this match, and I don't mean to sound, you know, like preachy about it, but AJ Styles is the best performer in the entire company. He's quite possibly the best overall wrestler in the world. I mean, he has been off and on. I think when he got to the WWE and they gave him a microphone, the little bit of uneasiness he had with cutting promos just disappeared. And he's so good on the microphone. He's so good in the ring. And he's a guy where he's got that window that we're talking about. He's
yes.
not young.
He's not.
You know, he's 38. So there's only one right decision here. Dean Ambrose is younger. He'll be there for longer. AJ Styles should be the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, or whatever they call it, World Champion, when Backlash goes off the air. If he's not, I don't really have any interest in watching SmackDown.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they need... I think that is the right answer, but here's my prediction. If AJ Styles comes out with a different haircut on the night of Backlash, then he wins. If he doesn't come out with a different haircut, then Dean Ambrose wins. That's my my prediction.
I like it. that match is an interesting scenario where, you know, there's not really many times where you look at it and like AJ Styles almost needs that title.
Why else is he there?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. I mean,
he already beat John Cena. That was awesome, and it worked perfect, and it was one of the cleanest, best matches that we've seen at a pay-per-view for a very long time, involving John Cena especially. And why else is AJ Styles there than not to be the top guy? Like, I was listening to something and it was about Brock Lesnar, and everyone was like, why wouldn't Brock Lesnar try to become the champion? Because why else would he be there? Which makes perfect sense. I believe in that. I think it was you that said that, actually. Like, why isn't he challenging, you know, for the Universal Championship? It makes perfect sense. Same thing with AJ Styles being on SmackDown. Why else is AJ Styles there? Like, people like Randy Orton, that's going to give Randy Orton the ability to fight AJ Styles for a championship and then win and or lose, as he hopefully will lose more than he'll win. But it gives reason and value for these competitors to be on the shows that they're on. AJ Styles needs to be at the top of the game, and I think it would be – you're right when you say there's only one right answer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hope anybody listening to this hears those words that Matt just said. Why else is he there? Like, they talk about him leaving from Japan to go to the WWE, where he was the champion and one of the top guys. He didn't come to the WWE to wrestle The Miz, you know, or anybody. He didn't come to the WWE to not be, you know, the top guy. And to be completely honest, it's a rare situation where he needs that belt for his career, and they need that belt on him. So, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. Like, you've got money in AJ Styles with that title, and then, you know, like, dodging people and finding shortcuts to hold on to it, but still showing, you know, off his full range of talents. And it also gives you, if you want to go that route, it gives you that Cena-Styles title match when Cena comes back.
Yes, that's what I was just about to say to you as well. It gives that rematch of being like, all right, I'm back, and I see you're holding on to something that should be mine or whatever. Like, it could definitely work itself into those things. I think, are you excited for Backlash overall, like preemptive grading? What do you, I only see it being like a 6.5 out of 10, maybe a 7, but that's only because I think Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles is going to be a really good match. And I actually think the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt match is going to be pretty good too. Even though I do see Randy Orton going over Bray, which almost begs the question, is Bray like a zombie that just won't die? Like he doesn't win. We know that, so I don't know.
I once, probably 6 months ago, on the Working Rest Hold podcast, said that Bray Wyatt is the highest level jobber that the WWE has ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say so.
You know, like, they build him up, and he works everybody in that company. He beats absolutely no one ever. There's no purpose for him to be there anymore. He's lost all the heat that he had. He had absolute star written all over him.
The worst part is... Now, I think partly the worst part at this point is he plays the same theme for all of these storylines that he gets involved with anybody. It's just, I see the darkness in you, Randy, and I am not a man, and I cannot die. Like, all right, Paul Bearer's, you know, bastard son. Like, we're just sick of hearing you're backwoods. We get it. You're mystical. We get it. You're voodoo-ish. We get it. But how about you win? And then maybe we'll believe in you. But as I agree with you completely, he is the highest paid jobber. I guess there has to be somebody like that, right?
Yeah, well,
who else is Randy going to beat up?
Well, and that's, you know, like, I agree. I think that match will probably be the second best match on the show. But what's the point of it?
Yeah.
You know, at this point, like, Randy Orton lost his momentum. He comes back from being gone for 8 or 9 months and gets annihilated by Brock Lesnar. And Bray Wyatt gets beat by everyone, so it's kind of just like, you know, the Biggest Loser contest. I mean, I think that Orton will win, and that will, you know, will right the ship. And then they'll start pushing him again. But at this point, like, Bray Wyatt just seems like this lost cause.
Yeah, hopefully they are able to do something good with him after this. I'd like to see him disappear for 6 months, and then when everyone's kind of forgot about him, see him make this, like, big comeback. You know, just random, kind of like an Undertaker style, because he is kind of that, evil magic style persona and stuff. I'd like to see him come back and just like wreak havoc and really take a hold of the whole place. It could make it, I think they could do something smart with him, but that's enough about Backlash. You wanted to touch about Kevin Owens real quick. Did we kind of speak about that before we talked about the Backlash, kind of out of order like we were expecting, or is there something else that you wanted to say about it?
I just think, you know, it takes a very brief period of time to say, for all the complaints, you know, that the WWE catches for not pushing talent or not being able to recognize talent or whatever, you know, people want to complain about their favorites not getting a push. Kevin Owens is a guy that was never supposed to be there. You know, he doesn't have a WWE body. He doesn't have a WWE attitude. You know, he was working Pro Wrestling Guerrilla in California and Ring of Honor, and William Regal saw him at a PWG show and saw something special in him. And then Triple H got a look, and, you know, that's all it took was Triple H. And, you know, for all the misgivings and criticisms that WWE gets, you know, takes from fans, rightfully so, Kevin Owens is that story that you hear about every once in a while where they did the right thing. And the guy that deserves it has his moment. So I just think, you know, for in 2016, with all the cool things going on in wrestling, with the Cruiserweight Classic and the WWE working with, you know, Evolve, and you've got NXT and the indie scene is going strong, it's also really cool to acknowledge that Kevin Steen or Kevin Owens, whatever you want to say, is the WWE Universal Champion. And that's just a really special moment that people should really stop and think about.
Yep. And I think it's very telling about Kevin Owens, because one of the greatest moments in a younger guy coming up to the main roster and facing off against John Cena was he beat John Cena in that first encounter clean.
Yep.
And it was a great match. And I think we are going to see a lot of Kevin Owens. And I think there's a reason. He is a great performer, works the microphone very well, and he gives somebody that look and appeal and style that you kind of want to see. What's he going to do next? And I think that's one of the big reasons. But I think we hit all the talking points we want to talk about. We talked about the Cruiserweight Classic coming to an end very shortly. Obviously, the next episode of it is going to be on September 14th. It's going to be live, so I'm super excited for that. Hopefully, we'll see the semifinals and the finals, and all will be right in the world. Backlash is going to be coming up. I don't know when that is. Is that this Sunday?
That is this Sunday.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I need to post this podcast before this Sunday then. otherwise, it means nothing. All right, well, yeah, that's great. So this Sunday, we got Backlash, and then this Wednesday, we'll have the Cruiserweight Classic, and then hopefully we'll meet up again and talk about all this fun stuff. You can find Ben normally on other podcasts, though. Go ahead and pimp out your podcast a little bit.
We've got the Indie, or Working Wrestle Presents the Indie Darlings. We're kind of an irregular, dysfunctional podcast right now, but we're trying to hammer out some kinks. But you can check us out. You can search for Working Arrest Hold and the Indie Darlings will come up. We talk about the United States independent wrestling scene and the UK independent scene. And then you can also find me on Twitter at Nuke the Bridge.
And you can always find me at Only Matt Dezen. You can find me on my Nintendo podcast, Nintendo Fever. We try to talk about all the latest Nintendo news. We're going to be talking about this coming up Monday when you hear the podcast. We're going to be talking about the craziness that is Mario on iPhone. What is going on in this world? I'm an Android user. This is not fair.
I'm an Android user also, and that news came out. And we'll get Mario eventually, but again, we're being slighted for the powers that be at Apple.
Yeah, darn them and all their money.
That's right.
But we'll talk about that during the Nintendo podcast, and hopefully we'll get together, and we are going to do it. I'm telling you, Ben, we're going to talk about our favorite wrestling games for Nintendo consoles, and we're going to go like in depth with it, because some of the best wrestling games have ever been released on a Nintendo console. So we're going to definitely talk about that sometime soon.
Yeah, we're going to nerd out on that.
Very much so. But thank you so much, Ben, for joining me on this second episode of Marks and Smarks. I'm so glad we were able to get it done a second time, and hopefully we can get a few more under our belt, and we're going to make it prime time. We'll be at WrestleMania, right?
Hell yeah. We're going to be broadcasting live from the floor.
From the floor. They're going to use our table like they would a Spanish announcer table. So
that's right. Yeah. It will look out for us.
It will be great. Thank you so much, Ben, and I will see you later.
Sounds good. See ya.